30 years ago, I was received into the Catholic Church. Based on what I know now, would I do it all over again? I'm going to take an honest look at the state of the church today and the challenges that are faced by converts. Hello, I'm Eric Sammons, your host and editor-in-chief of Crisis Magazine. Before we get started, I just want to encourage people to smash that like button, subscribe to the channel. Don't bother hitting the notify button because you have a life outside of the internet. But if you are on the internet, then go ahead and follow us on social media at Crisis Mag, at all the major social media locations, all those platforms. Okay, I want to get started here. I just want to warn people that I am Easter was 2 days ago, and it gave me a stomach bug that I'm fighting off right now. So hopefully this will go well today, but if it doesn't, my apologies in advance. So today is April 11th, 2023. And 30 years ago yesterday, I was received in the Catholic Church. Easter 1993 was April 11th. At the Easter Vigil the night before, April 10th, 1993, I came into the Catholic Church. Now, it was an interesting time. I was in the early stages. I was a member of the early stages of the wave of conversions into Catholicism in the 1990s. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the last 30 years and how things have changed for the Catholic Church in America, and how that impacts our ability to attract converts, keep people in the church, and what have you. So in 1993, when I came in the church, things were definitely looking up for Catholics. And by the way, just to be clear, I'm talking about in America here. I didn't live in Europe. I didn't live in Africa. I didn't live in Asia. So I'm not going to speak about personal experience there. I lived in America. So I'm going to talk about the church in America here. So in 1993, like I said, the Catholic Church in America seemed to be turning a corner. And what I mean by that is the 1970s and the 1980s were not good for the Catholic Church in America. Catechesis was awful. Liturgy was very bland, not very good at all. And a lot of people were leaving the church. And not many people were coming into the church. But then what happened was in the late 80s, starting the late 1980s and continuing on to 1990s, we all of a sudden saw an increase in the number of people converting to Catholicism, particularly Protestants. Probably the most well-known was Scott Hahn. He came to the Catholic Church in the late 1980s, and there were other Protestant ministers. This was also when Catholic Answers, founded by Carl Keating, really got off the ground, and his book Catholicism and Fundamentalism came out in the early 90s, which was also a major factor in people coming into the Catholic Church. In fact, those two, both Carl Keating's book, Catholicism and Fundamentalism, and Scott Hahn's conversion story were instrumental in my own conversion in the early 90s. So both of them I credit in large part to my own conversion. And it was a time when the dominant figure was, of course, John Paul II, Pope John Paul II. And the 1990s were definitely his heyday. Obviously, he became Pope in 1978, Pope throughout the 80s and 90s. But it was the 1990s where he became the rock star. He was popular in the 80s, but in the 1990s, that's when you all of a sudden saw him on the cover of Time Magazine, Newsweek. You'd see he was the man of the year. And the big event of 1993 was World Youth Day in Denver, which I attended. And this was a big deal in the Catholic Church. I remember before World Youth Day happened, in the lead up to it, a lot of the leftist Catholics in this country were, and the secular media were poo-pying and say, oh man, nobody's going to end up going to this. This is going to be a big disaster. And of course, the opposite happened. Tens of thousands of young people came. It was a big deal. I was there, and it was exciting. This was just about 5 months or so after 4 months after my own reception in the Catholic Church. And just to be around tens of thousands of Catholics, see bishops walking around, talking to people, priests, that was a big deal for me. That was a huge deal for me. And so the 1990s looked like, okay, the 70s and the 80s are behind us. And now we're going to see a revival in the Catholic Church. And the underlying premise of the revival was what we now call, I can't remember if we called it this then, but we now call the hermeneutic of continuity. meaning we are finally going to implement and interpret Vatican II the way it should be done. Like everybody acknowledged, who was not a leftist crazy person, acknowledged that what happened after Vatican II was not good. And so most Orthodox Catholics, faithful Catholics, were in the conservative camp, we call it now, the idea that we just need to interpret Vatican II and implement it properly, and then this revival will continue. In fact, that's what we saw was the result of the 1990s Heaven and Earth converts, were people like John Paul II, people like Scott Hahn, who were following Vatican II in the proper way, and that was bringing in a lot of people. And so each year, there was about 150,000 people came into the Catholic Church every year in America during the 1990s. And so, like I said, it was a great time to become Catholic. It was a very exciting time. I was very much looking forward to the future, that I thought, okay, clear skies are ahead for the church. We're going to continue to see all these converts coming in. Protestantism was on the way out and Catholicism was on the way in. Then the 21st century happened. I don't know a better way to put it, but the 21st century so far, we're only 23 years into it, it has not been kind to the Catholic Church in America. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Obviously, the impact of John Paul II decreased radically pretty soon into the 21st century, and he died in 2005. And we can't ignore the abuse crisis that had been going on during the 1990s and 80s and 70s, but was not publicly known by most people until 2002 when Boston erupted. And now all of a sudden people realize how deep, well, actually we didn't realize yet, but we realized, okay, corruption and abuse is deep in the Catholic Church. And then we eventually found out, and we're continuing to find out, it's even deeper than we suspected in 2002. That was obviously a big blow to the Catholic Church in America. And I think just the fact that John Paul II died in 2005 had an impact, because it was a personality cult in a lot of ways. I'm not saying the whole Catholic Church was a personality cult in America. What I am saying, though, is John Paul II had a huge impact on the Catholic Church in America in the 1990s and in the early 21st century. So when he died, that went away, and he was no longer the dominant personality in the church. And then Pope Benedict became Pope, and I was super ecstatic when he became Pope in 2005. I love Joseph Ratzinger. I was very excited. I've talked about that before. But I think if we're honest, we would acknowledge that the average Catholic wasn't exactly gaga over Pope Benedict. He was seen as, he was stereotyped as a aloof professorial type, maybe a little bit harsh, you know, God's Rottweiler, all those stupid stereotypes about him. But the point being that he wasn't really that popular. And so the personality cult that surrounded John Paul II did not follow with Benedict. I went to see when Pope Benedict came to Washington, D.C. in 2008. I think it was 2008. I went to go see him. And it was nice. It was exciting. But it was nothing like World Youth Day in 1993. I also saw JP2 when he came to Baltimore, I think it was in the late 90s. And there was a definite difference when Benedict came. It just wasn't the enthusiasm. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just simply stating that that had an impact on how the Catholic Church was viewed by potential converts, by fallen away Catholics. I think the church lost a lot of its momentum from the abuse crisis, from JP2 dying, Benedict being a less popular pope. And also I think that was, and I wrote an article about this for Crisis a couple weeks ago, that was the rise of the new atheists. And there was a full-fledged assault on religious beliefs in general, not just Catholicism, but all religious beliefs. And so what we see is, starting in 2000, you know, early 2000s, we're starting to see a decline. The momentum's no longer there. And you see that in the numbers. If you look at the numbers of adult converts, baptisms, infant baptisms, attendance at Mass, everything, they all start dropping in the early 2000s. And so all the hope we had in the 1990s really started to come crashing down. Now, a lot of people continued to defend the hermeneutic continuity under Pope Benedict. I was one of them. A lot of people felt that was still the way forward. That was still the way we're going to bring about a revival in the Catholic Church in America and continue what happened in the 1990s. But really, it didn't pan out like that, because then all of a sudden, 2013 happens. Pope Benedict resigns and Pope Francis is elected. And needless to say, Pope Francis has had a huge impact, obviously. And it just shows, let me take an aside here for a second. It just shows the impact of the Pope on Catholicism, particularly in this country. I don't think that's a good thing. I don't think that's a healthy thing. Obviously, we want good popes. We want holy popes. But I think Catholicism should be able to stand or fall regardless on who the Pope is. If the Pope just stayed in the Vatican and almost said nothing, just kind of ran the church administratively, talked to his bishops, told people what, you know, kind of told his people under him what to do and stuff like that, but never really went out and talked to people or anything like that, Catholicism should still thrive. It doesn't need a personality like John Paul II. It shouldn't need a personality like John Paul II in order to thrive. Now, human nature being what it is, those things do help. Those things do have an impact. I'm sure that St. Peter, when he was preaching at Pentecost, also had a personality along with the Holy Spirit to bring people along. But I definitely think that what we're seeing is like, if you notice, the Pope, whoever the Pope is, seems to really have a great impact, a bigger impact than he should on the status of Catholics in America. So we get to Francis 2013. And frankly, what we see now over the past 10 years is chaos and confusion. I had a podcast a few weeks ago on the 10th anniversary of Francis becoming Pope. And I went into that there, so I'm not going to relive the problems of this papacy. But it's basically, the church is just in turmoil now. Like, I get that in the 1990s, underneath the surface, a lot of bad things were happening. I acknowledge that freely. Yet now, and maybe you could just argue, maybe things are out on the surface and that's a good thing. And I think there's an argument for that, that if there's evil lurking underneath, getting it out in the open is not a bad thing. In fact, it's the only way you can eventually eliminate it. And I feel like that is what's happening now, is that we had great evil within the hierarchy lurking under the shadows during the 1990s. We didn't know about it. And so a lot of good things were happening on the surface. And I think in people's hearts, I mean, my conversion, I'm still thankful for it. And other conversions like Scott Hahn and people like that. But the point is that now these things are much more on the surface. And Francis has done this because you can't hide behind his chaos, his confusion, and frankly, his scandalous papacy, which has allowed people, which basically empower people like former Cardinal McCarrick and various other prelates and priests. And so we have scandal, we have chaos, we have confusion right now. We have attacks on the traditional liturgy, but also traditional morality. Tradition in general. What am I talking about? Not just traditional liturgy and morality, tradition in general. We see it constantly. The Pope constantly talks about the problems of tradition. He words it slightly differently. But simply put, he makes it seem as if we have to reinvent the church every year. And that's antithetical to Catholicism. Catholicism, the whole point of it is that we hand on what's been passed on to us. Yes, we might have some new insights from saints and theologians over time, but ultimately we're handing on what we've been given. We're not changing it in any way. Yet we have a catechism now that frankly is like a bad software program that you're constantly having to do updates to keep it running. That's not Catholicism. And so that is the state of the church today, that we have this chaos, confusion, we have attacks on tradition, we have what appears to be the bedrocks of the church being called into question at the highest levels of the church, from the Pope to Cardinal Supich and McElroy and Gregory and people like that. And so, and also, it seems like the current Pope doesn't even want us to become Catholic, doesn't want people to become Catholic, the way he talks about conversions. And so the question does become then, if I were Protestant today, what would I do? Would I still become Catholic? Now, here's something about my own story of conversion. One of the major factors for me in my own conversion was the abortion issue. I'm Methodist, but I became very pro-life in high school, early college, got involved with the pro-life group at my campus in college. And everybody in it, all the diehard members were Catholic except for me. Now, I had come to realize the United Methodist Church was not a denomination I could be part of because of its pro-abortion stance. I knew a Church of Jesus Christ could not be pro-abortion. And so I was looking for some other denomination that I felt was secure on this. I mean, obviously, they needed to be good in other ways, but that I knew they're pro-life. So, for example, I was looking at the Southern Baptists because they were solidly pro-life at that time. But the thing that bothered me was I knew the United Methodist Church was originally against abortion, and they had changed. I also knew the Southern Baptists initially actually were pro-abortion, and they changed to be more pro-life. And so the nagging doubt I had in my mind was, if I become Southern Baptist, what's to stop them in a few years from becoming pro-abortion? How do I know for sure they won't eventually change their position? And then I'll have to go through the search again. And this troubled me. And I remember asking my Catholic best friend, who became my sponsor one day, and my roommate, I asked him, I said, how do you know the Catholic Church isn't going to one day change its teaching on abortion? And he looked at me, and he gave a look that basically said, that's the stupidest question I've ever heard in my life. He's like, I just know. I just know it won't. And that had a great impact on me because I was like, I want that confidence. I want that ability to just know that the church I belong to cannot change on a fundamental teaching like abortion. And so that the fact that the church was a rock, that it would not change, because to me, I saw all the problems. I could see that there was problems in the Catholic Church, that there were priests and bishops who were heretics, stuff like that. But I thought, okay, the Pope, though, is Orthodox. The church is not going to change. The catechism is Orthodox. It's not going to change. Therefore, I can join this church. So now fast forward to that was me today. And I asked somebody, let's say I asked somebody, a Catholic friend, and I said, how do you know that the church won't change its position on the death penalty? How do you know the church won't change its position on divorce and remarriage? How do you know the church won't change its position on artificial contraception? These are more difficult questions today than they were 30 years ago, in my opinion, because of the confusion and chaos that has been brought about by Pope Francis that was underneath the surface before Pope Francis. I don't blame everything on Pope Francis. I think he is the natural result of a lot of things that were going on before, since the 1960s, even before the 1960s. But the point is, if I'm Protestant, and I think Catholics need to do that. They need to put themselves in the mind of a Protestant and how they would think about these things. And ultimately, I think it would be a harder sell to me. If I'm looking just from a human standpoint, then I do think it would be much more challenging for me today to convert than it was 30 years ago, which is why I greatly admire the people I see who are converting today. I mean, just this past Easter, we saw more converts coming into the church. God bless them. We should pray for them. And the reality is a lot of the converts from the 1990s fell away. A lot of them were no longer practicing a year even after their initial conversion into the church. And so I admire those who have converted Catholicism. They see the truth and beauty of the church in spite of the chaos and confusion. But I do think we have to acknowledge this is a reality today. And that's, and the fact that we see a lot less conversions today should be a sign of that. I mean, God's grace works through any situation, but it works through, it perfects nature. And so if our nature, if human nature can get in the way of grace, I mean, that's just a reality. God does not force himself upon anybody. If a lot of barriers are put up by church officials, that will keep people away from the church that the Holy Spirit is calling. And so I feel like today the church does outwardly seem like less of a rock than it did 30 years ago. Now, I know 30 years ago, it wasn't as rock-like as I thought it was. But at the same time, the perception is what matters. And the perception now is definitely less of a rock. Now, that being said, am I saying I'm taking back my conversion? Am I saying people shouldn't become Catholic? Absolutely not. I don't think that at all. I don't regret my conversion for one instant. And I really do think that if I would still convert today, knowing what I know now, at least, even knowing what I know now, because I do know all the bad stuff that's going on in the church. I know about Pope Francis. I know about the corruption within the hierarchy. I know about the scandals. I know about the widespread heresy. I know about the liturgy that's got all these problems. I know about all that. But what I also know is that Jesus Christ made a promise to the Catholic Church, and he does not break his promises. The problem is often as Catholics, we want to add on to his promise. We want Jesus to promise more than he actually has promised. He promised the gates of hell would not overcome the church. He did not promise that there would not be scandal and confusion and chaos within the church at any time. He did not promise that there would not be evil prelates who roam throughout the church seeking people to devour. He did not promise that everything would be hunky-dory, that we'd have great popes. None of that stuff he promised. And I feel like too many Catholics, we tack on extra promises to Christ's promise. And so while the church might appear to be bending, it does not break. It is still that rock. It will not falter. It will not stop making the means of salvation available to the world, which gets me into my second major reason why I would still become Catholic, knowing everything I know, and that is the sacraments. The sacraments. This is something you cannot have as a Protestant. You cannot have if you're an atheist or whatever, a Muslim or Jew or whatever. In the Catholic Church are the sacraments, and in the sacramental church is salvation. And I know that the sacraments are the thing that keeps me getting up in the morning. It's the sacraments that keeps me from just giving up. It's the sacraments that give me strength. And it's the beauty of the sacraments, seeing it them alive in other people, that make me realize this is the church Christ founded. Because we see that in baptisms of the new Catholics who came in this Easter, of babies, sacrament of matrimony being celebrated by faithful Catholic couples. My own daughter's getting married in a couple of weeks, and that's a sign of joy in the church. We see so many different ways that the sacraments impact us. The sacrament of confession, people going out. I mean, the lines at my parish are just so long for the sacrament of confession. I know that's not the case everywhere, but just seeing that reminds me that God is still faithful. We're the ones who aren't always faithful. He is still faithful. He's still giving us the means of salvation through the sacraments. And so we still can avail ourselves of them. And I just can't imagine a Christian life without the sacraments. That's the key thing for me, is like, the sacraments are essential to Christianity. You've never had Christianity without the sacraments. And so therefore, you cannot follow Jesus Christ without the sacraments. Not faithfully, not in the way he wants you to. And so the sacraments are why I would still become Catholic today. Another reason is the saints. I've seen, reading church history, you see the example of the saints. And the fact is, human nature cannot explain the saints, the greatness of the saints, the St. Francis of Assisi, St. Therese of Lisieux, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Maximilian Kolbe, St. Ignatius of Loyola, St. Athanasius, St. Augustine, I mean, I could just go on and on. And the reality is, it's only because of their membership, incorporation into the Catholic Church, that they were able to be the great saints that they were. There are no comparable people outside the Catholic Church. I'm sorry, there just aren't. There are some great men and women who have lived throughout history, but there are no saints outside the Catholic Church. And that is a major reason to become Catholic, is because you know that it's through the Catholic Church that this grace is available, that people can become united to the Lord in a very deep way and be transformed. That's the key. Because the fact is like, I know myself. I'm weak. I'm fallible. I'm just my human nature. I'm not a good person. But through the sacraments, I can be transformed. That is the key. And it's only through the sacraments I can be transformed. So that is a key reason. And what I see is that the saints have been transformed. And it's through the sacraments that they were transformed. And then finally, another reason just to be Catholic, because it's true. If it's a process of elimination when it comes to religion. The first one is, are you an atheist or are you religious? Only an idiot is an atheist. No offense to any atheists who are listening here. I say that in the nicest possible way, but you're an idiot if you're an atheist. What I mean by that is it goes against your reason. It's very rational. It's the most rational thing to believe God exists. But then you have the question of which religion is the right one? And Christianity has all the proofs for it. But then within Christianity, the Catholic Church, I'm not going to go through them all now, but the point is the Catholic Church is the one true church. It's the one founded by Jesus Christ. It is the one God wants us to be part of. It is true. It is self-consistent. And it is the most faithful to Jesus Christ. And so therefore, yes, I'd still become Catholic today. And yes, I encourage people to become Catholic today. And I think that's the key that I'm trying to say here, is that it can be hard to be a faithful Catholic today. Let's be honest. It can be hard. But I feel like when we really look at it seriously, all the problems are on the surface and all the beauty is in the depths, in the deep, underneath. That's the reality. We see all the problems. We see Pope Francis. We see Cardinal Supich. We see Father James Martin. We see all the heretics that are reigning supreme in the church. We see the scandal. We see the abuse. We see all these things. But what we don't always see is the faithfulness of God under all of that surface muck. It's like a Miss America contest winner, the woman who won Miss America, for example, who all of a sudden fell into a pit. She's got mud all over her. She's disheveled. You look at her and you immediately think, oh, that's some crazy person, whatever. But yet underneath is this beautiful woman. And that's what we have with the Catholic Church. We have our beautiful mother who the prelates of the church, the leaders of the church have tried to make her look ugly. And in the eyes of many who can only see with human eyes, she does look ugly. But the fact is she is beautiful. So what we need to do is we need to recognize that it's hard being Catholic today. And we need to acknowledge that publicly, because otherwise people will only see the surface. They're like, why are you Catholicism, you have all these problems. If you say, oh, no, we don't, we're fine. People know you're lying. People know you're just BSing them. And so we say, yes, you're right. Catholicism does, in America at least, has a lot of problems. And I could go over with them with you as well. However, what you're not seeing, what's not making the nightly news, not making Catholic news agency website or EWTM, is the beauty underneath it of the sacraments, of the saints, of the truth of Catholicism that is still impacting hearts today. So I think what we need to do is we need to recognize that things aren't as outwardly beautiful as they appeared to be in the 1990s. They're in fact uglier outwardly than they were in the 1990s. However, that true faithfulness, that beauty is still in the Catholic Church and always will be until our Lord returns. And so we need to recognize that Christ is our true head. not any of the leaders. They do have an authority that we need to understand and recognize, but they're not the reason we're Catholic. We're Catholic because of Jesus Christ. So I just thought I wanted to kind of talk about that today because, like I said, I've been thinking a lot about the last 30 years because yesterday being the anniversary of my conversion, and I was just struck by how thankful I am that I came to the church when I did. I'm glad I've been 30 years a Catholic and not just three or something like that. All the people who've came in the past few years, God bless you. Welcome. We want you all to come in. I'm very thankful, though, for being Catholic for 30 years. And I hope and I pray that I'll be Catholic for the rest of my life and, of course, be Catholic forever in heaven. And so let's pray for each other. Pray that we can overcome the chaos, the scandal, the confusion in the church today, and bring it to the fact that many people in America will see the beauty, the true beauty of the Catholic Church, and become Catholic as well. So we see a rise in conversions rather than a decrease in the number of conversions. Okay, that's it for now. I'll leave it with that. Until next time, everybody, God love you.